Hello, respected viewers. It's George from Ireland, so welcome back to my New Look channel. Anyway, I'm talking about the Battle of Avdiivka in Ukraine. So it looks like Russia is going to take this city sooner rather than later, certainly by the end of March. And to some extent, it's a replay of the Battle of Bakhmut about the same time last year. And this battle in Avdiivka has been going on for over 4 months. And this really is the pivotal point of the war at the moment. So Avdiivka is a city in eastern Ukraine in Donetsk region. Remember, that's a region which Russia claims to have completely legally annexed in September 2022 when they held a rigged election, despite not controlling the regional capital or indeed half the region. So the Ukrainians are being defending it valiantly. They built extensive defences, including tunnels, but they're under increasing pressure and they're finding it ever more difficult to resist. So they're going to have to withdraw from there. It's just a matter of time. The city's almost surrounded. The main arterial route is under threat, so it's increasingly difficult to bring in munitions and even food. The Russian sappers are building tunnels. They've been digging under and coming in behind the Ukrainian defences. Up to 150 Russian soldiers broke through via a tunnel last week and were beaten off only with great difficulty. So one of the many problems with the Ukrainians is they have an insufficiency of shells. So they say they're only firing under 2,000 shells a day across the whole front line of about 1,200 kilometres, whereas the Russians are firing over 10,000 shells. So they just can't really counter that Russian fire. The other thing is the shortage of drones and everything else, and soldiers, just general exhaustion. So the one thing that is different from Bakhmut last year, obviously the Wagner private military company is not involved, it's been dissolved, and the Ukrainians are not crowing that they're inflicting very grievous losses on the Russians. So the Russians, they have learnt through bitter experience how to manage all-armed cooperation and how to gain ground without suffering such high losses. Though yes, they are paying a price. So it's just a matter of time, how long is it worth hanging on there? The Ukrainians, they went against American advice and they hung on Bakhmut longer than many people thought wise, but in the long run appears to have been the right decision, in as much as they inflicted such heavy losses on the Russians that the Russians just lost momentum after that. So Bakhmut is going to fall, and General Valery Zaluzhny, the most senior general in the Ukrainian armed forces, he was relieved of his command yesterday. President Volodymyr Zelensky, he praised Zaluzhny for his service to his country and for his gallantry. But there've been open rumours in the media for several months that there was a certain animus between the two men, and President Zelensky even acknowledged these rumours, but he said they were bogus. Anyway, his replacement has been announced. President Zelensky said they need for a fresh perspective at the top of the armed forces. Now, some people see this as buck passing, that he's just simply blaming Zaluzhny. Zaluzhny actually remains very popular with the public and indeed with his men, but thought to be politically unambitious. I don't think there's going to be a military coup or anything like that. So Ukraine is a genuine democracy. One of the problems is they're supposed to hold a general election this year. And they said they can't, they're under martial law. And the European Union says you really have to emphasize how you're different. But it's very difficult to hold an election when there is a hot war going on and they're going to lose places like Avdiivka. So what will be the consequences of losing Avdiivka, some of the high ground there? That'll obviously jeopardize a bit more of Donetsk region. And then Russia will be looking for the next city it's going to take. So the Ukrainians have to build up defenses on whatever they think is Russia's likely next target. And it underscores just how vital it is for Ukraine's allies, principally Western countries, to provide them with more munitions. Remember, the European Union promised them 1 million shells by the end of spring this year, provided only 300,000 so far, but they've got to say that another couple hundred thousand more on the way. But the European Union is definitely going to miss its target and by a very long way. Ukraine is obviously boosting drone production, things like that. There's talk of trying to buy NATO standard shells, 155mm shells from neutral countries like Turkey. Yes, Turkey is a NATO country, but remember, NATO doesn't actually take a side in this war. It's true that most NATO countries are pro-Ukraine, but that's not an official NATO policy. For example, Turkey says we are neutral and they've not funded Ukraine at all, not given them any weapons whatsoever. They might be willing to sell them either directly to Ukraine or to a country like Poland, which would then hand on to the Ukrainians, maybe replacing some of the Polish stocks. So that Battle of Avdiivka is going to come to an end certainly by the end of March 2024. The thing is, can Ukraine carry on defending cities? How fast are they going to retreat? The trouble is an orderly retreat can turn into a rout. And can they make it so painful, so costly to the Russians stop advancing? There are those who say that they're approaching a stalemate. The two sides might be so exhausted that the conflict will de-escalate in 2025 if indeed there isn't a formal truce or actual peace treaty. The real wildcard factor is what's going to happen with Western military support, like in the United States Congress, where this bill is being held up in the House of Representatives, and the Speaker, Mike Johnson, he says it's dead on arrival, that they're not going to get those tens of billions of dollars of American military aid. So I think, as I say before, the Americans will provide some military aid, but not yet. And it's not going to be the amount they originally hoped for. Some's going to go to Israel, some money's going to be spent on border security and so forth. But if there isn't enough Western military and financial aid forthcoming, the Ukrainians cannot afford to sustain their war effort. And obviously Putin knows it. So kill them through the deaths of a thousand cuts. This is attritional warfare. He's gradually going to wear them down. The whole blitzkrieg in 2022 failed. So where's the next Avdiivka? There are a number of cities along the Eastern Front, or indeed the Southern Front, that could be where Ukraine is going to do this. So the new head of the Ukrainian armed forces is Oleksandr Sirsky. He's 58 years old, and he was born in Russia. He obviously served in the Soviet army because he would have joined it 40 years ago before Ukrainian independence seemed remotely likely. Anyway, the United States has declined to comment on this, saying this is a decision that Ukrainians made for themselves. So there's no evidence that Zelensky was pressured to dismiss Zaluzhny or indeed to keep him in his post. Another thing that people who are in favour of Ukrainian freedom abroad might not realise is Zelensky is not as popular in Ukraine as you perhaps imagine. Or certainly his popularity has dipped through as the war has gone on, because there's really no end in sight. And people overpromised about that counteroffensive this summer, which gained only about 16 kilometres. They needed to go forward about 160 kilometres to get to the Sea of Azov and break the land corridor between Russia and the Crimean Peninsula. So if there were an election, he would face a strong challenge. It's possible that his predecessor, Petro Poroshenko, would attempt to make a comeback. There have been corruption allegations against him, but he's been investigated, his properties have been searched, but he's never been in charge with anything. And indeed, this might just be intra-elite warfare, because it was well known that peculation, embezzlement and so forth are rife in Ukraine, and bribery is a way of life. Now, I'm not saying that every Ukrainian elitist is guilty of this. And another point is Vitaly Klitschko, the mayor of Kyiv. He would be a possible presidential candidate. And although he and Zelensky managed to have a cordial working relationship when the war began, they had to sink their differences in defense of the capital. There is obviously some tension between them, and it's not just ideological, it's partly political. So Zelensky's re-election would not be a foregone conclusion if an election were held. And honestly, how long can he delay it? Can he delay it by a year, by 2 years? But you might say, well, look at the United Kingdom. So there was an election in 1935, there was due to be an election in 1940, but the Second World War had broken out. So the United Kingdom voted to delay that election annually, and obviously they held one in July 1945, just after the defeat of Germany, but whilst the war against Japan was still ongoing. So Ukraine's Western allies would say, you really ought to prove you are a democracy, that you're holding this notwithstanding the war. Now, obviously, Russia's holding an election between the 15th and 17th of March, a presidential election, and you can bet your bottom dollar who's going to win, because Vladimir Vladimirovich Putin is leaving very little to chance. So the Central Electoral Commission, they have disqualified the two pro-peace candidates, because I know it's a charade, but Putin would like to win by an absolute landslide. And OK, he probably doesn't want the officials to even count the votes. He'll just make up a number. But if there's any pro-peace candidate, that might lead to pro-peace demonstrations, and the situation could get out of hand. So he's not going to allow any possibility of that happening. But it'd be good to have a contrast between that in Ukraine. But on the other hand, there might emerge a candidate in Ukraine who says, okay, let's negotiate. Let's be frank. We can't win this war. Be lucky if we can call it a draw. We're going to have to make some painful concessions. It'd be better to lose a small section of our territory than to lose everything. And someone could take that view without being a pro-Moscow stooge. You've got to ask yourself, how many people are you willing to lose? If you're a country of 4 million people, to maintain their democracy and indeed their independence, is it worth 100 people being killed? And I would say it is. Is it worth 1,000 of your people being killed? I would say it is. 10,000, maybe. 100,000, Probably not. A million? Definitely not. There comes a point when the pain is too terrible and you'd be better off losing. Now, Ukraine doesn't appear to be close to that breaking point. And the crucial thing is to convince your enemy that he's already lost. Once they believe that they've already lost, they stop fighting. I remember one of my teachers at school who'd been in the parachute regiment said it's about breaking the enemy's will to fight. You may not need to inflict many casualties, but as soon as you've broken their will to fight, that's it, they give up. You know, thinking about where was that that fort in South Carolina in the American Civil War, right at the beginning, is at Fort Sumter, that was shelled for about 48 hours. Not a single Union soldier was killed. I'm not sure any were wounded, but they surrendered. Their will to fight had been broken. Or like in the First World War, Germany willing to suffer terrible casualties, willing to have 500,000 of their people die of malnutrition because they could believe they could win. But as soon as they believed that it was impossible to win, that's when they gave up. There was no purpose in suffering anymore when there was no chance of attaining victory. Sometimes they might still believe they could win, but the cost would be too high, that it's just not worth it. Somewhat depend on the terms that Putin is willing to offer. The trouble about him is he's so utterly dishonorable. He's so utterly mendacious that you can't trust a single word he says. You know he's going to break the deal. He's broken every single treaty he ever signed. Remember, obviously, Russia recognized Ukrainian independence in 1991. They signed the Budapest Accords in 1994, again recognizing Ukrainian independence, guaranteeing its neutrality, giving it security guarantees in return for Ukraine handing over all its nuclear weapons for free. Putin himself in 2003, he agreed a treaty yet again delimiting Ukraine's border and recognizing the Crimean Peninsula as an integral part of Ukraine. Anyway, thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon to have access to thousands of videos and articles behind the paywall. Moreover, give me an extraordinarily generous donation on PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.